The excitement of opening day quickly wore off as the tedium of jury selection hit hard. Hours passed as the lawyers questioned the pool and Judge Jones methodically dismissed one after the other. Ron, for his part, behaved himself. He looked nice, a haircut, a shave, new clothes. He took pages of notes, all under the eyes of Barney's son, who, though as bored as the others, managed to keep an eye on the client. Ron had no idea why he was being watched so closely. Late in the afternoon, the final 12 were chosen. 7 men, 5 women, all white. Judge Jones gave them their instructions and sent them home. They would not be sequestered. Annette and Renee were hopeful. One juror was the son-in-law of a neighbor who lived across the street from Annette. Another was related to a Pentecostal preacher who surely knew of Juanita Williamson and her devotion to her church. Another was a distant cousin of a Williamson relative by marriage. Most of the jurors looked familiar. Annette and Renee had seen them at one time or another around Ada. It was indeed a small town. The jurors were back by 9 the following morning. Nancy Shue gave the opening statement for the state, almost a carbon copy of the one she had used for Fritz. Barney deferred his initial remarks until after the state's case-in-chief was finished. The first witness called by the prosecution was again Glenn Gore, but things did not go as planned. After stating his name, Gore went silent and refused to testify. He invited Judge Jones to hold him in contempt. What did it matter? He was serving 40 years anyway. His reasons were not clear, but perhaps had something to do with the fact that he was doing time at the state prison where snitches were held in low regard by their peers, as opposed to the Pontotoc County Jail, where snitching was rampant. After a few moments of confusion, it was decided by Judge Jones that Gore's testimony from the preliminary hearing the previous July would be read to the jury. This was done, and though the impact was somewhat lessened, the jury still heard Gore's fictitious account of seeing Ron at the coach light the night of the murder. Barney was robbed of the opportunity to grill Gore on his numerous felonies and their violent nature, nor did the defense get the chance to question the witness on his whereabouts and movements on the night of the murder. With Gore out of the way, the state's case quickly got back on track. Tommy Glover, Gina Vieta, and Charlie Carter gave the same testimony for the third time. Gary Allen told the same strange story of hearing two men squirt themselves with a water hose at 3:30 a.m. early in December 1982, but emphatically could not identify Ron Williamson. The other man might have been Fritz, but maybe not. The truth was that Gary Allen couldn't identify anyone and had no idea when the incident occurred. He was a drug addict, well known to the police. He knew Dennis Smith because they had attended classes at the local college. Smith approached him shortly after the murder and asked if he'd seen or heard anything suspicious in the early hours of December 8th. Allen said he had seen two men squirting themselves with a water hose at the house next door, but could not remember the date. Dennis Smith and Gary Rogers jumped to the conclusion that it was Fritz and Williamson washing off the blood of Debbie Carter. They pressed Allen for details, even showed him a photo of the murder scene. They suggested that the two men were Fritz and Williamson, but Allen could not and would not identify the two. Shortly before the trial, Gary Rogers stopped by Allen's apartment and again suggested details. Wasn't it really Fritz and Williamson, and didn't he see them outside early in the morning sometime around December 8th? No, Allen could not be certain. Rogers brushed his coat away from his hip so Allen could see his service revolver. He said that Allen might get lead poisoning if his memory didn't improve. It did, but just barely enough to testify.